basement. But hopefully we'll be getting some tea and coffee while we're waiting. I suggest that we continue with our meeting, and then when the tea and coffee comes, I suggest people just quickly and quietly go and collect their tea from the back, and then resume assume their seats again, and we will just continue. That's okay with everybody. Unless, of course, the tea comes in the next 30 seconds. There are a few announcements. Those of you who were not here the last time and who haven't yet confirmed your availability or otherwise with Mr. Brown, please do so for the workshop that we're hoping to conduct on the 25th to 27th. It's a Thursday evening to the Saturday noon. Okay. So please, at the end of the meeting or during a break or whatever it is, just confirm your availability or otherwise with Mr. Brown. We really need to know what the numbers are so that we can start paying people and so on. The second thing is, I don't see Dr. Plotus Lawrence here, but she is the convener of the subcommittee that is meant to look at the themes around public hearings. Mr. Bundy, have we finalized the summaries for for the purposes of the subcommittee?
We have, yes. Thank you.
Okay. So, pardon? Yeah.
Subsequent to us having gone through the submission, about almost as much has come again in the meantime, so we might have to work through those as well. But what we have is about 90 odd that we've gone through.
Okay.
There's another 100. We're running through about 130 now.
130 submissions. Okay. Look, let's do this. Can Dr. Clopas Lawrence and Mr. Bundy and Mr. Brown, just after the meeting, let's just have a short meeting. I know that there's Mr. Brown has just told us, Dr. Clopas Lawrence, that of the original submissions that we've had, Mr. Bundy says that they've summarized the original ones. We had about 40, if you recall. But Mr. Brown says that we're now up to 140. So we will need to just modify how we approach the categorization and so on. So just let's stay behind and just let's have a bit of a chat as to how we proceed from here, okay? Okay, and the oversight framework, that's the other thing that I think we need to get some progress on. And I think it was Ms. Gina and Dr. Clopas Lawrence who were doing that one as well. So let's have a discussion on all of those things after this meeting, okay? Welcome. No, Mr. Brown is quite adamant that we will have to finish this meeting by 12:30 at the latest. So. That would include our small meeting, so we hope to be finished by about 12, because Mr. Brown has got a very much more important gathering to host in this venue. It has something to do with a ball and two big poles and kicking things and wrestling with people and so on. Welcome, Dr. Rakametsi, to you and your team from Umalusi. While they're busy taking out the tea there, I'll ask Mr. Brown to just help you with some tea as you people proceed, but I suggest we continue into the briefing. As usual, take about half an hour for that at the most, and then I'm sure members will want to interact with yourself. And we proceed from there, all right? welcome as well to you, CFO. I'm not sure at any stage. I think what we normally would want to do, and I'm not sure how your briefing begins, but I take it that there is a sense of you do have the budgetary breakdown in your program. Let me just say to your CFO, at any stage after the briefing, if you then want to come in on the issue of the figures and so on, please just indicate to me, and then we'll hand over to you before we open the floor. Over to you, Dr. Rakhmetse, and welcome.
Thank you very much, Ms. Chohan, and honorable members of this committee. Let me take this opportunity to thank you for the opportunity of presenting our budget to this honorable committee, and immediately tender the apology of Professor Volmink, who had wanted to be here, but due to long-standing engagements elsewhere, he could not remove himself from those engagements, and therefore he cannot be here. He tenders his apology. With me here today is the Chief Operating Officer of Umalusi, Mayor Eugene Rabe. She is basically in charge of all the professional work that Umalusi does. And we also have with me here the Chief Financial Officer of Umalusi, Mr. Jeremy Thomas. He's in charge of corporate services and finances at Umalusi. Our presentation is going to focus on the following: Umalusi's mandate as propounded by the GenFedCoa Act. We'll be looking at the vision, mission, goals, and the key results areas. And those two will be done by me, followed by the budget 2009-2010, which will be done by the CFO, Mr. Thomas, the forecast 2010-2011 budget, Mr. Thomas, three-year budget forecast, and we'll do the conclusion. Chairperson, as the new Quality Council, we have been mandated to develop and manage a sound framework of qualifications for general and further education and training in terms of qualifications. We have also been mandated to develop and quality assure qualifications and curriculum. Before any qualification can appear on our framework, we have to ensure that the curriculum is up to standard and that it meets the specifics of that level of a qualification. We also do quality assurance of assessment at exit points. In other words, while it is true that there are a number of assessments that happen in the schooling system and even FET college system, we only quality assure those that are at exit points. And we further certificate learner achievement, where at exit points we quality assure the examination, we ultimately also certificate the qualification. We also quality assure provision of education in the private institution, private colleges and private schools, private adult centers. And we also accredit the private providers of education and training. And we also do the accreditation of private assessment bodies. I'm talking here about the Independent Examination Board. I'm talking here about the OAER, Onafhanklike Afrikaanse Examines Rank. We do the accreditation of those assessment bodies. According to our new mandate, we will conduct research in the work related to our sub-framework as a quality assurer, and we've also been mandated to advise the minister, and that we do through regular reports to the minister on key issues that affect education in our area of operation. Now, in terms of our vision and mission, the Umalusi Council and staff are committed to continuous improvement of quality and standards in general and further education and training as leaders with expert knowledge in the sector to develop and secure standards. Perhaps I need to indicate that we engage in continuous review of our processes. Whilst we have quality assurance processes that we've been using for some time, those are perfected and strengthened where necessary. we look at what we've been doing, and through some internal research, we also strengthen those processes. So we develop and secure standards by quality assuring qualifications and curricula, confirming that assessment is fair, valid, and reliable. We will not have an examination that is unfair to learners in terms of its level. If it is too high in terms of level, then it is not fair. It should be valid and reliable. It should be comparable from year to year so that we know what we are churning out of the system for the benefit of the employer, for the benefit of higher education institutions, for them to know what standard our qualifications are. Those qualifications have to be fair, valid, and reliable. We also do quality assuring quality assurance of the provision of education, training, and assessment providers, that I've said already, in order to issue learners with certificates that are credible. It's very important that our certificates are credible, because otherwise they lose currency and value if they are not credible. Our goals are to promote quality and appropriate standards. We have to maintain and improve educational standards through quality assurance of qualifications and curriculum, assessment and provision of education, training and assessment. We continuously develop in-depth knowledge and expertise in mandated areas through rigorous research. Before we can say we've got a particular position at Umalusi, we conduct research. A case in point here would be an example of the change from the old native curriculum to the new national curriculum statement, where we have conducted the maintenance standards research for us to check at what level the new qualifications are pitched as compared to the old curriculum. We report on the quality of education, training, and assessment, and such reports are shared with the department, they are shared with the ministry, and they are shared with relevant stakeholders. We issue appropriate and credible certificates for learners, for learner achievement in terms of specific qualifications and subjects. We provide reliable, credible leadership and guidance in quality management and in the assurance of standards. We continuously ensure financial efficiency and sustainability of the organization and determine the expectations and appropriately respond to these within the parameters of Umalusi's mandate. Chairperson, the key result areas, which are seven, I'll quickly just take you through them. We're improving and maintaining the system for quality assuring assessment for certification. Improving and maintaining. In other words, whilst we are maintaining, we're also continuously improving the quality assuring of assessment for certification. Establishing and implementing a system for evaluation and accreditation of providers. You'd note that the independent providers, before they can be allowed to provide education in our country, they have to be registered by the Department of Education and accredited by Umalusi. We're implementing a system of evaluating and accrediting these providers. Establishing and maintaining a system to certify and quality assure qualifications and curriculum, I've spoken about that. We research, diagnose, and report on quality in general and further education and training supported by statistical analysis. The statistics will tell you in which direction things are moving, and we have to act accordingly, according to the information that we glean out of the statistical reports that we have at Umalusi. Developing and maintaining management support structures and governance. We've got a management support structure that supports our professional work at Umalusi, and we also have a council that looks at our governance issues, and we have to ensure that that council is functional, ensuring that information technology systems are established, maintained, and improved in order for us to run the organization efficiently. And we have to ensure that finance, human resources, and administrative support systems are maintained and improved. Chairperson, that covers the introductory part of this presentation to this honorable committee. I'm now going to hand over to the Chief Financial Officer of Umalusi, Mr. Thomas, to deal with the financial issues of the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Betsy. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I first of all would like to go through the budget, the current 2009-2010 budget, that and this budget period ends at the end of March of this year, to give you an indication of where we stand with the current budget. The figures that are before you are on the left. We have the designation of the income, and in the center we have the budget figure, and on the right we have the actual amount that has been invoiced as at the end of January 2010. So accreditation fees, for example, we budgeted 2 million rand and we've already invoiced 1.7 million. Certification fees, 18.9 million was the budget. However, we have already invoiced for 26 million rand. That is due to the increased student numbers, because as we know, the old senior certificate examinations are being phased out by 2011. And so the numbers have just gone up, and as a result of that, we were able to collect a little bit more. The Department of Education grant, 16.4 million, and they've already paid their last tranche during the month of January. Interest was budgeted for 2 million. We've already received 1.4 million in interest. Reserve funds, in the budget, we budgeted about 10.4 million that we were going to require from the organizational reserve funds, and to date, because of the increase in certification fees and others, we did not have to touch our reserves, and that is a plus for us looking forward, and I'll explain that a little bit later. In terms of verification fees, that is where we verify whether a candidate has matric or N3 or not. We budgeted 4 million. We were only able to collect in about 2.3 million of that at this point in time. It does seem, however, that there is a drop in employer organizations verifying the qualifications of their employees. And all indications are that the DPSA has indicated that government departments should verify all its staff. So we're expecting an increase in the next financial year. Other income, that is in general like our refund on ETDP levies. There's a HESA project where some money came in, about 100,000 rand, working together with HESA on a project. Staff also pay for their private telephone calls and that kind of thing. So all in all, we, on the income side of the budget, 53.8 million, we've already invoiced 48.5 million. This budget, by the way, was approved by the minister on 12th of March last year. If I can go to the expenditure side of the current budget, again, the same pattern. Quality assurance of assessment, therefore, had a budget of just over 9 million rand. To date, we've spent 7.1 million, still about 20% to be expended, and all indications are that that money will be spent before the end of the financial year, which is by the end of March. Evaluation and accreditation, a budget of 3.4 million, only spent 1.8 million. All indications are we'll also spend that, because there's a lot of work that has taken place during the month of February and March. Qualifications, curriculum, and certification, budget of 3.7 million, already spent 2.5, and all indications are that will be spent. Statistical information and research is our unit that we call the SIR unit, a budget of 1.6. We've overspent on SIR by 1.9 at this point in time, and the main reason is the fact that research is a new part of our mandate, and we had no historical figures to actually go to cost that. So it will be a bit, this year will give us a better indication for what we need to do for next year. In terms of management support structures, that is the support services that support the Office of the Chief Executive Officer, we're on par. We have a budget of 1.5, already spent 1.5, and most of our meetings have already taken place for this financial year. So there's only 1% of the budget remaining there. Corporate services IT, we had a budget of 4.3 million, only spent 1.9 by the end of January. And we were, if I could use these words, we were blessed by CETA not by refunding us almost a million rand in terms of their services that they offered to us. And so there's going to be a bit of a saving on the IT budget this year. Corporate services finance, a budget of 5.3 million, or only spent 2.6 at this point in time. There was some money reserved for renovations, which haven't taken place yet due to the nature of getting plans approved by municipality and so forth. But the all indications are that those works could commence before the end of the financial year. In terms of corporate services, human resources management and development then, 24.6 million, we've already spent 21 million. We have 15% of the budget remaining, and that's basically for salaries of staff. A budget of 53 million, we've already spent 40.6 million, which means there's about 25% of the budget remaining before the end of the financial year. As at the end of January, therefore, we show an accounting surplus of about 7.6 million. If we look at the forecast now for 2010 going forward, starting 1st of April 2010, and I just want to show the outcomes for quality assurance of assessment. I will not read them all because those are the outcomes for quality assurance. The budget, therefore, for this current year was just over 9 million rand. For 2010, there is a 96% increase, 17.6 million required. And I'd just like to read some of the reasons why we will require that increase in the proposed budgets. The budget now has dictated the sample on which Umalusi has had to base its decisions. And Umalusi is of the view that these samples are not adequate and could compromise its ability to make sound pedagogic and evaluative judgments. The proposed budget then, therefore, for quality assurance of assessment is not only going wider, but it's also going deeper. We look at the National Senior Certificate, which is technically over 3 years, grades 10, 11, and 12, and we have to continue to moderate all the National Senior Certificate question papers, and we have to increase the site-based assessment sample of 5 subjects per province to at least 12 subjects per province. We also have to increase the monitoring of examinations to about 10%. Currently, in this current year, we only moderated the examinations about 3%. That's roughly between 550 to 600 sites. We also have to increase the moderation of marking to at least 50% of the subjects as compared to the current 15. So if we look, that's for schools. If we look at vocational education and training, we have to moderate all approximately 280 NCV levels 2, 3, and 4 question papers as compared with the current 151 question papers. We have to increase ICAS moderation to include all fundamental subjects and at least one core and one vocational subject per program. We have to monitor at least 10% of the examinations, and I think the issue here for Umalusi has always been, you know, what is regarded as the scientific sample size for moderation? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? Is it between 10 and 20? It is quite clear that we've been below 10 and we need to push that up, and I think therefore we have to increase the budget for quality assurance of assessment. I'm sure we'd probably have further discussion later if there is. I will move on to the next unit then. Evaluation and accreditation have a current budget of 3.4 million and there's a proposed 17% increase in the budget, which seems to be on par with the expenses for this financial year. Qualifications, curriculum, and certification, current budget 3.7. There's a proposal for 4.4 million rand. Statistical information and research, they have a current budget of 1.6, but we notice that they've already spent just over 2. And we had a proposal for 2.1 million, but this amount would have to be reviewed, which is technically a 30% increase in terms of budget only. Management support structures, 1.5 million, and we propose an increase of 14% for 2010. IT, 4.3 million, we propose an increase of 15% for the next financial year. And corporate services finance, an increase from 5.3 million to 6.1 million, a 14% increase for 2010. Human resource management and development have a budget of 24 million, and we propose an increase of 14% to 28 million. Overall, then, an increase in the budget of from 53 to 69 million, which is a 29% overall increase, bearing in mind that the bulk of the reasoning of that increase is because of the quality assurance of assessment increase in sample sizes and the moderation tariffs that have gone up for 2010. The next slide, just to show that Umalusi, since its inception in 2001 to where we find ourselves now in 2010, revenue has gone up and expenses have gone up dramatically since 2010. Bearing in mind that in the first 2 years of its inception, 2001-2002, Umalusi made a loss. There was, in terms of our grants, we only received a grant from 2003, which was 11% of the budget. And it peaked in 2005, where the grant was about 55% of budget, and then came down again to around between 31 and 35% of the budget. Umalusi has also always made a bit of a surplus from 2003-04 to the latest 2009-10. I now show the percentages of the actual versus the budget. Particularly focusing on the grant percentage here. And as we can see from 2002, the grant has increased from about 11%. For 2010 onwards, we see the grant is going down from 25% of the total budget down to 21%. And we really need to focus on looking at possible some kind of funding model to ensure sustainability, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. The three-year forecast, therefore, for the next 3 years, we're in 2009-10, we have a budget of 53 million. We propose 69 million for 2010, 80 million 2011, and 2012, 92 million. There's a substantial increase for 2010 based on the increases in the moderation tariffs and the sample sizes, and then a tapering off to around about 16-15% the following years. I now just graphically show the issue around the grant percentage and the grant that is required. Umalusi requires a grant of around 47% of its budget for 2010 and 2011. However, we've only been assured 25% of our budget. 2012, we require 56% grant. We're only receiving 23%. And 2013, we require 60% of our budget. We've only been promised 21%. So there is kind of almost a tapering off of the grant that is being given to Umalusi. There are three possibilities when one looks at funding models. And it's always been a discussion that I've always wanted to have and had with the previous CFO and the previous DGs of the Department of Education. Because when Umalusi's grant started in 2003, I remember back then there was no Umalusi received a grant of 1 point something million, and that was programmatically increased every year by 15%. And at the end of the financial year in 2005, for example, when the department had excess funds, it would grant Umalusi that excess funding, and that could sustain us again for the forthcoming years. And the concern has always been that, the approach, there was no model that we could base. So budgeting kind of became a very, very difficult scenario for us, because we knew what the department had forecasted, but those forecasts were always below what we required. And when we look at funding models, we have now suggested that we move away from a certification fee, which is a fee levied on printing a certificate and not necessarily taking into consideration the quality the cost of the quality assurance processes in full, to moving towards a quality assurance levy, which is levied against the number of learners that have entered the schooling system. And whether the candidate passes or fails is unimportant here. The quality assurance work still has to take place, and therefore a fee needs to be levied for those learners. And that proposal has been made via the Department of Education, Basic Education, to the National Treasury. And we certainly hope that there will be some positive response to that, because that would assist Umalusi in being able to plan better for the future. There are other models where you have activity-based costing, where whatever you require, the department would then provide. And that has definitely not been the case. Or where the departments, like I know within the case of FET institutions, where the departments provide the salary bill. So it's been very difficult for Umalusi to ensure sustainability going forward. If we look at the next slide, 2011, this is the next financial year, 2010-2011. We have a budget, a proposed budget of $69 million. The departmental grant has been indicated as $17.3 million, and there's the red portion, which is $15.3 million. We've just received a letter from the Minister's Office on Friday to indicate that we need to submit a revised budget, because they cannot provide the $15.3 million that we require. And therein lies our problem. It means we need to go back to the drawing board. Umalusi does have reserves. We have reserves of around 25 million rand at this point in time. And should we utilize that 25 million, it means that we'll be left with 10 million plus the 7 million which we already indicated we would make up in our budget, which means we would require 22 of the 25 million, which leaves Umalusi with a reserve of 3. And as a public entity, we're then treading on thin ice, I believe, for this, looking forward to the sustainability of the organization. And if there are any contingencies, we might find ourselves in trouble. So, but the minister has indicated that they will have a look at the standard-setting function, which has come from SACWA to Umalusi, and see what National Treasury will provide in this regard. So between Friday and today, unfortunately, we could not amend anything, and therefore I'm just mentioning this at this point in time. We would have to go back to the drawing board, Chair. 2012 is a similar situation, a budget of 80 million, grant of 18 million and a difference of 26.5 that is required. 2013, a budget of 92 million, a grant of 19 million, and an additional requirement of 35.9 million. conclusion, therefore, the financial sustainability of the organization of Umalusi through increased funding from the Department of, through the Department of Basic Education from National Treasury is critical. We need to either look at the new funding model for public entities like Umalusi, or the proposal of moving from a certification fee to a quality assurance levy needs to be pursued with the urgency that it deserves. Or our baseline allocation would then just need to be increased. Chair, I end my presentation on that note.
Thank you very much. Can I just check with the CFO, Mr. Trudeau, how does this thing work? Is it the same as other institutions that basically get a viament or a ring fenced amount as part of the department's budget from Treasury, and that actually Umalusi doesn't go to Treasury directly? They work through the department. So you and your staff in your unit would sit down with Umalusi, am I correct, and work out to your satisfaction what it is that they absolutely require from Treasury. You then take that to Treasury and you motivate it. Umalusi does it. That's how it works. And these figures that we've now been presented with, this has the concurrence of the Department of Education in terms of the grant that is required and so on. So you guys would have sat down with these figures and satisfied yourself that this is, in fact, what is required.
Thank you, Chair. Can I perhaps just mention that since last year there's been a process with Umalusi, as was indicated in the presentation as well, that we did approach National Treasury. In fact, there was also an additional bid from Umalusi side, so that we can increase the subsidy to Umalusi. As department, we even did a submission to Treasury in the 2008-09 year to already increase Umalusi subsidy for 2019. That was unfortunately not successful. In the bid to Umalusi that we had for the 2010 NTEF, together with the Umalusi, the department came with a proposal to say that where many of the current costs that Umalusi carry is basically functions where they must invoice, for instance, provincial education departments for certain services that they render. Now, there is a problem with the invoicing, there is a problem with the payment of some of those invoices, and therefore it places a burden on Umalusi itself. Our proposal then to Treasury is that we deduct that amount from the equitable share to provinces and allocate that directly to Umalusi. Now, we are still awaiting an official response back from Treasury for the interim. It's not yet approved. In the last discussion we had with Treasury, which was last week, Treasury did indicate, which we understand, that there is tremendous pressure on also provincial budgets over the NTEF, likewise in the provincial education budgets, and that they would not very easily support that cut on the equitable share. What we do want to do is, we already had a discussion in our senior management meeting, and that is to go with a detailed proposal to the Heads of Education Departments Committee, to get their buy-in for such a shift of funds, and then also go to the Council of Education Ministers to put in front of them the whole procedure, the benefits, if we do take away that portion of money from the equitable share. So that will happen within the next 3 to 6 months with HEDCOM and CEM, so that by the time that we have to do our next MTF submissions for the 2011 MTF, that we have to do the proposal to go with the Treasury, and hopefully we have then also the agreement of HEDCOM and CEM, which will make it much easier to do that. for now, the current budget of, or the proposed budget of 69 million that Umalusi have on the table, the minister, as was also indicated in the presentation, approved only the 54 million portion, which is based on secured funding. Obviously, the department is not in a position to subsidize the 15.3 million out of its own budget to provide an extra subsidy to Umalusi for 2010-11. So the minister did approve the 54 million budget at the moment, and as indicated in the presentation, requested Umalusi to come back with a revised budget. But this is an ongoing aspect that we are looking at, and we hope that we can resolve this matter by 2011-12. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to open up for questions now, but I just have one issue of clarity here. Could we just check on, I don't know, the stuff is not smart, so I guess it will be page 3, which is the slide that says expenditure budget versus actual, Mr. Thomas. You with me? Am I correct to say that on the statistical information and research, there's been an overspend there as of January 2010? So come end of financial year, there'll be a marked increase to that overspend on that particular item, right? And then with corporate services IT, there's a serious underspend. And as much as you said that CETA has refunded a million, it doesn't give me a good sense of why there is that underspend. And then you look to what your proposal is for the IT for next year, or this current budget, what's it, 2010-11. I see that there's a 14% increase that you require. Maybe you want to explain that before.
Thank you, Chair. That is absolutely correct. There are some aspects of the budget. For example, when we look at IT, that we're going to have to go back and discuss with CETA, for example, because we don't know what the next increases are going to be, because that is approved by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. And there is also a large project that has been planned for in IT, as far as our disaster recovery goes for 2011, where all our information will be stored automatically off-site, and so there's a large amount of money that we require for 2010 to be able to put that in place. As also indicated under the research unit, we are going to have to go back to the drawing board, unfortunately, for research based on the okay.
Slide number 14, you say that your current budget, which is 4.3 million, right?
That's right.
Which, by the way, you've underspent.
Yeah.
Because what have you got? And I imagine the 4.3 includes the 1 million refund.
That's right.
Okay, so basically, in a sense, you've underspent by about 1.5, yeah. I would imagine, around, right? And you then project a 15% increase. What I'm missing is what informs that 15%. So you're saying you're talking to CETA and you're going to have storage capacity. What particularly makes up that 15% increase that you're now suggesting you're going to incur?
Well, Chair, the detail of that would be the impact. We're looking at the implementation and installation of a disaster recovery site and the hosting of an on-site website and the integration with the requirements for an electronic data document management system, which are all new projects that is ongoing, which we've just started basically, and that money is going to be required in 2010 to be able to do that. We're also busy with a project to look at the implementation of an item bank system for question papers, and develop a system for capturing and the management of irregularities, which is all new things, and which has been scoped. And so that would take care of the increase. But as I said, the questionable part is the part where what was budgeted for CETA, and that we need to go into discussion with them.
I think, Mr. Summers, what you're pointing to is this. You see, it's very difficult for us here to establish your priorities in the current budget, as much as you seem to be pretty forceful in your arguments that you need X amount of money. You know, Parliament is now just rolling out the possibility of amending budgets. And I think it's important that all institutions that report to Parliament must take that into cognizance. We're no longer an institution that looks at your budget, you come here, you make a presentation, you go away, and Treasury does whatever Treasury does. This is a new ball game altogether. But in order for us at this point to make any suggestions at all to the committees where the budget will ultimately have to be scrutinized and amended if necessary, you have to sit here and convince us that this is of such a priority that if this doesn't work, then our whole core mandate as far as education is concerned is going to fall apart. And I don't see this in the presentation. I certainly don't see it for each of the forecasts that you're making. Develop and maintain qualification sub-framework. You say you need an 18% increase. I've got no sense of what that means. What does it entail? Is it more staff? Is it more stationary? Yeah, what is that? So what we need in future, I think, is a set of analysis for each of these tables. And I like the way you've broken it down in that sense, because that gives us a good sense of, you know, where the big issues are. But the meat of it is just not there. And I'm not sure that I, for one, sitting here, will be able to say, well, you know, I think Mumalusi should get this money. So I do think that's something that perhaps you should bear in mind for your future engagements with us, so that we are absolutely sure of what each of these programs entail. And I think what you must do is you must break it down equally, because as far as I know, you've now been given what your figure is going to be for your grant, right? So how are you going to use that grant as well as your income? So in other words, you've got income coming in, you've got your grant, just the way you've shown us for the past year. But we have no sense of how you then expect to allocate it. So that's the other leg of the inquiry, is you've got all these programs, but we don't know which are the priorities. And assuming, which is what you're saying, you're getting X amount less than you've asked for, you're going to have unfunded mandates. So we would like to see what you're going to fund from the budget that you do have, and what would remain as activities that you would consider unfunded. So that we can see when you come here next, in August, September, October, and if you don't do certain things, I can't point you to these targets and say, well, you know, you promised to deliver X, Y, Z, and you failed to do it. And you say, well, we didn't have the money to do it. So I said, we gave you the money to do it. Why didn't you do it? So those are things that I think we need to have some kind of system on when you do report. What your priorities are, what the funding is for that, and what, more importantly, you think you're not going to be able to achieve because you haven't got any money for it. Okay. I forget, Mr. Lorimer, sorry.
Thanks, Chair. I've got four questions. I'm not sure whether I should ask them one at a time or put them all together.
Let me just see how many hands. One, two, three, or four. Put two questions, we'll have another round. Okay. Oh, sorry. Ms. Mushana, you're going to have to wait because I'm looking this way for members. So put two and then we have another round.
Okay, thanks, Chair. You talked about a gap between the amount that you'd invoiced and the payments that you've actually received. How big is that gap in terms of actual money? And is it going to affect your position at all? The second one is regarding increased sample sizes that you're doing. Could you just go over again why those increased sample sizes? And a related question, we've been told that there's going to be new external testing in grade 3, 6, and 9. Are you involved with that? And is there a budgetary implication?
That's three questions. I know I've also had an apartheid education. Fine. I've got, I think it was Ms. Gina at the back.
I think I needed to add on your comments, the first one, just to say, really, even for, I think for most of us, we cannot talk to the presentation that they've just presented to us. And I wanted to suggest, Chairperson, to say, I don't think as a committee we should wait for October for them to come back. I think it's proper for us to say there are even some changes that they need to do of which we cannot wait for October. If it is possible, can we they come as soon as possible to come in and redo the presentation where they have broken down everything so that we can have a clear understanding? Because for sure, after this meeting, we cannot say we have endorsed anything from the presentation that they've given us today. I think for now, Chairperson, let me stop.
Yeah, I think what we will do is we'll get a written report on the analysis, and we're going to have to assess it on the basis of that report, Ms. Gina. The reason is, as you know, we can only sit at certain times, and for this term, we definitely will not have time to sit with Omar Lucy again. So really that's going to be the basis on which we're going to have to receive that information in written form, okay? And then we'll assess and we'll see if we need to see them, and if need be, then we'll have to see you again in the next term. Mr. Scott.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, in the presentation I got a new item, reserve funds. I really don't understand what are those funds reserved for, and I want to know from Omar Lucy, when they draw their budget, are they considering that those reserve funds to be coupled with the new budget, or they don't consider it? Really something that is, yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just appreciating the presentation. First, I just wanted to understand from the CFO of the department, clarify in terms of what model. I understand there will be, there's a need to look at the remodeling of how you fund the Umalus. But currently, what are we working on? What are the bases when we go and present? How do we prioritize? What informs our priority in allocating the budget? That's the first thing. Secondly, it's the issues of percentage, Chair, I think it's linked to what you were saying. And also, I think that's important too for even the department to start concentrating all the stakeholders on the impact of money bill. Because quite honestly, it's going to have a serious impact. And if they don't do that, the department and the stakeholders would run the risk of their budget not being approved and reviewed by the committee and by Parliament itself. So we've got, I think the department needs to really, really seriously start engaging, either run a workshop and understanding of what that impacts. But what are the, how did you determine the percentage in terms of the increases? Somewhere you have 18%, somewhere you have 14%. What informs that? What would have decided that you needed a 17% increase in evaluation and accreditation, and therefore in qualification you did 18% increase? What are those bases that you use? So I think, let me just stop on the two questions and then we'll take Mary Lady.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for sitting on the wrong side of the table, but I still remain part of those days. I'm looking at slide number 20, and I see it is a bleak picture of the department saying you are underfunded. The budget actually is not making you happy at all, if I understand this correctly. But if you take this, because I see this is what is like promised to you, this is what is granted, but you wanted your next door neighbor on the right, am I right? You are looking for 60% where you are given 21, blah, blah, blah. And I look at your slide number 14, and maybe have to reiterate what the chairperson wanted to find out. I mean, if you have underspent by 1.5%, if I collected it correctly as you were speaking, and you need to get an increment of 15%, do you think you would give anybody coming to you to request for this much while they failed to? Because it's like we must be realistic in what we request. If the school can say, come to you and say, this is what we want this year from you, and you know for a fact that this school underspent by this much, but they want a lot more. Is this taken as very much reasonable? Thank you very much.
Natural questions, maybe you want to feel that, and then we can have a second round.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for those questions. Firstly, I would like to start off by saying that the difficulty about the presentation for us today is the whole aspect of timing with regards to our response from the ministry. And so we should have technically presented after having gone back and been able to rework the budget based on secured funding, of course. And that has not been the case. Firstly, to talk about the gap between the invoicing and the actual payments.
What exactly is the problem with that? Why was that not done?
Chair, the strategic plans and budgets were submitted to the ministry in September of last year for the next three financial years in terms of the PFMA. And we received a response last Friday with regards to the secured funding and the approval of the budget. And we have not had time to be able to rework the budget. So what is presented here is the actual budget, the way it was presented in the strat plans to the ministry. And therefore, some things, as I said, we'd have to go back and rework and review. But so that Parliament has an idea of the way it has been presented to the Minister to make that decision.
Mr. Trudeau, on that score, is that undue delay or is that a normal thing?
Chairperson, in terms of the submissions by all public entities, it's going through a thorough review by the relevant branch, looking at the strategic plan, linking that to the budget to make sure that everything that they say in the strat plan is actually funded and vice versa. In the case of Umalusi, the process took slightly longer as we had all these discussions with National Treasury as well in order to see how we can manage the possible increase that Umalusi may have and the specific administrative burdens that they do have. So that took slightly longer in the case of Umalusi. But normally, we have a 3 to 4 month period in which the strat plans, and if there are specific questions, to sort that out with the public entities before the budget is approved by the minister.
Just an unusual occurrence, so it should not recur at this juncture. So the problem isn't with Parliament calling these hearings early; it's with whoever else the problem was. Okay.
No, thank you, Chair. So that is the difficulty at this point in time. But to start off with the first question that has been asked around the gap between the invoicing and the payments, our outstanding debtors at this point in time is about 6 million rand.
And these are made up of provincial departments as well as FET colleges that failed to pay us on time. So Umalusi had to institute a mechanism to force FET institutions and departments to pay. So we say the minute they send us electronic data sets, the mainframe would send them a response back and say, unable to process. Kindly contact finance unit, you have an outstanding account. And we are trying to get them to pay first before we process certificates. Otherwise, this will just become a year-in, year-out event, which is a problem for us. And especially at this point in time where we find ourselves having to battle with budget and to make ends meet kind of from reserve funds, and I'll speak to reserve funds a bit later. Umalusi cannot afford to have its money or its income lying out there within provincial departments and FET colleges. We have engaged the department to assist when it comes to FET colleges in the past, and that has been somewhat helpful, but I think the aspect of blocking the electronic system seems to be the most effective for us, because now they have to contact Umalusi to make some kind of arrangement. So it's at 6 million at this point in time. I will, if you don't mind, I will leave the question around the sample sizes and grade 6, 3, 6, and 9 of to Ms. Rabe to respond to. Thank you, Chair.
I'll do the easy one first. The grade 3, 6, and 9 systemic testing, Umalusi is not involved in that, in quality assuring that. That has been used as diagnostic tests. They're not actually exams. So it's systemic testing, really. It's very different from what we do. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second question was around the sample sizes. Why increase the sample sizes? We're talking about an increase vertically and horizontally, and perhaps I should just explain what we mean by the vertical increase. The National Senior Certificate is a 3-year qualification. It begins in grade 10. Umalusi currently only looks at grade 12, and we do need to move down the system into grade 10 and 11 in terms of how we look at that qualification and how we quality assure it. In terms of its curriculum, in terms of its site-based assessment, those areas where the standard can be compromised, and that's really what we're saying in terms of the National Senior Certificate. That I'm talking about vertical increase now. In terms of the National Certificate Vocational, the NCV 2, 3, and 4 are each exit points in their own right. They're actually full qualifications, and the learner can exit at any one of those points in that those levels. However, currently, levels 2 and 3, while registered as exit points, and while the department would like to reinforce the fact that they are, in fact, exit points, they're not being funded as exit points in terms of their quality assurance. So that would be part of it. Currently Umalusi is not actually certificating NQF 2 and 3 because not only is there a funding issue, there is also a quality assurance issue because it's being marked internally and it doesn't really have that external component to the extent that we would like to see it. Not for 2 and 3, no, but only at 4, yeah. But although they're supposed to be exit points in their own right, and we would like to extend into that area, and we would like to now take up that mandate and move it forward. In terms of the GTC for adults, that's the ABET, there's no regulation around ABETs 1, 2, and 3. We certificated ABET 4, which is NQF 1. But there's no regulation of any kind in ABETs 1, 2, and 3. So you have a proliferation of providers running around issuing certificates to no given standard, in fact, often issuing certificates and then learners actually can't read at all. And we've had so many complaints, it's kind of a free-for-all. And so we would like to move down in the system, at least look at ABET level 3 and start to pull it together. So that's the sort of vertical increase we would like to do. In terms of the horizontal increase, just to give you some sort of idea, currently Umalusi really, in terms of the exam papers, We established the standard for all matric papers, so every single paper is externally moderated. But that is not the case for the NCV and not the case for the adult education either. We do a sample of papers, so there's that. But having said that, the rest of the quality assurance processes, like, for instance, the monitoring of the rollout of the examinations, and that's quite often where the irregularities creep in. You know, computers that are not secured, even invigilators that are dishonest. I mean, you can roll them out. There's lots of different kinds of variations on the theme. UMALUSI really only plays a verificatory role. So you have the provincial department monitoring, you have the national department monitoring, and then UMALUSI takes a small sample. But the sample is very small. Just to give you an idea for the senior certificate, UMALUSI only monitored 198 centers, right, where learners wrote, out of a possible 6,000, for instance, okay? In terms of the monitoring of the marking, I'm not talking about the standard of the marking here now. I'm just, you know, going to marking centers and making sure that the procedures are being followed. We monitored 45 marking centers out of a potential 120. Now, we just don't think that those samples have been, because it's been in the form of verification in a way, we've gotten by with it, but it just would lend a whole lot more credibility to that particular exercise if we were able to do it more extensively. I mean, the sort of irregularities that have been coming out in the system more recently and recurring in certain provinces, it really speaks to that monitoring. Yeah. Okay. What we are saying is at the moment we're doing about a 3%, for instance, sample, and we would like to move it to a 10% sample. So from 198 to about 500. That's what we're saying. 500 out of 6,000. That's just to give you some kind of idea of the kind of proportions we're speaking about. And we're speaking here about every one of our processes across each of our sectors. So it would be schools, it would be colleges, and it would be adult learning centers. In terms of the monitoring, that's what we would like to increase. So really, I don't know if that gives you a better idea of
what... So the bottom line is you're going to give us an improved service.
That's basically what you're saying, yes, yeah.
Yes, Chair. Reserve funds are those surpluses that have been accumulated over the years and put in the reserve. Now, in terms of the Treasury instruction, all reserve funds have to be invested with the CPD, the Corporation for Public Deposits, at the Reserve Bank. UMALUSI has about 25 million in reserve. These reserves are used in operations and when budgets are drawn up. For example, this current financial year, we had forecast that we were going to require 10 million, but because of the increase in certification and so forth, we're not going to require that 10 million. But looking at the 2011 financial year, there is now a shortfall of about 15 million. And as I indicated, we need to go back to the drawing board, or we are going back to the drawing board, to see to what extent we could provide or prop up the budget from those reserve funds. But at this point in time, as we speak, we have our units at UMALUSI going back to the actual costing for each and every line item activity, so that we can see where there has been an error or where there's been an overcompensation or where there's been an underbudgeting, so that we can come back to the minister with a revised proposal that is taking place as we speak. So, yes, reserve funds are considered when we do budgets. Then, Chair, in terms of the impact of money and the importance of budgeting, UMALUSI does an actual activity-based costing of what it actually costs per line item in each of its units. For example, if we have to fly a moderator from Cape Town to Pretoria to do certain work, we cost the actual flight, the honorarium, the travel and accommodation, and that would make up the costing for that particular unit. And so it is actual-based costing, and as I said, we are now in a process of reworking that based on the information we've shortly received. Thank you, Chair.
Jay, in that sense, I think the important aspect for Umalusi is the shifting of functions between Umalusi, SAQWA, and CHE. So between those three public entities, there is an exercise going on between basic education and higher education, as CHE and SAQWA will fall under higher education, to relook the entire budgets of those three public entities. The issue around a possible remodeling of the subsidy that Umalusi will receive is part of the exercise with Treasury to reduce the administrative burden, not only on the Umalusi side, but also on the side of the provinces for all these claims between Umalusi and the provinces. Now, that involves basic education, again, and higher education, especially in terms of the FET sector. So that is basically the main ground for looking at a remodeling of how to subsidize Umalusi specifically. In the past, historically, and I think it was also indicated in the presentation, the subsidy to the public entities in general was based on a relative percentage of the total budget of that public entity. Since then, due to economic pressures and pressures in general on the budget of the department, it was not possible to simply just increase those subsidies as would have been required, and they were normally just the normal inflation increases that was allowed by the Treasury in terms of the normal NTF budget. So that is why in the case of Umalusi, they also argue that there's been some kind of backlog in terms of the subsidy that they receive, the additional functions that they must perform, and therefore this whole exercise to see if we can remodel that.
I think look, on the one hand, I hear what you're saying about the issue of basic and higher, and FET is kind of falling in higher, whereas schools fall within basic. But it seems to me that shouldn't be too much of a problem, in the sense that you would cost FET, your FET stuff, differently from your other work, right? And that would necessarily just be submitted through higher, I imagine, to Treasury and not necessarily to basic. So that split is easily done. Am I correct to assume that?
Can I just clarify that this budget represents even what we do for FET colleges? So that we've submitted everything to basic education for the work, even that we do for higher education and training. What Mr. Tridu is referring to is the functions that were initially done by SAQWA in terms of standard setting, which are normal with SAQWA, that have to be done now by Umalusi, where we have to get that portion of the budget from SAQWA for us to execute that function. So it's referring to that. And the trick here is the fact that SAQWA and Umalusi are normally in the same department. They are now in two separate departments. So there has to be negotiations between the two.
But on the issue of the higher and basic split, am I correct to assume that going forward, this would not present itself? Because earlier on I asked the question, how do you process your budget requirements? You process it through the department, goes Treasury. Now, on the issue of the FET work that you do, which is now falling squarely within the domain of higher education going forward, right, there would be two streams, is that correct? One would be through basic for whatever work that is being done that relates to basic education and its functions. And then the FETs, and that portion of the budget that you require in terms of a grant for your FET, will have to be done separately. Or is there some arrangement going forward as to how, okay, Mr. Trudeau.
Yeah, as still stand, Chair, all our budget, regardless whether it is for the work for basic education schools or FET colleges, which is with higher education and training, all the budget will come from basic education, so that we are not going to be doing two budget submissions to two different departments. We do only to one.
That's an agreement that you would have reached with the departments, both the, those departments as well as Treasury.
That's correct, Chairperson. And in terms of the legal assignment of powers to the Minister of Basic Education, Umalusi will be a public entity of the Department of Basic Education, so therefore the subsidy and all other managerial aspects around the public entity will go through the Department of Basic Education. There is an agreement between the DGs at the moment, and I trust that that will continue over the years, that there will obviously be liaison between the two departments in terms of the specific functions that Umalusi has for the FET sector. So there will still be cooperation, but in terms of the management and coordination and monitoring of the Umalusi as public entity, the work will be done by the Department of Basic Education.
Some stage when this actually works, then I want you to come and tell me how it works, because I can't see it working. But I'm happy to be proven wrong in this regard. My worry is simply this, that Treasury doesn't ring fence amounts. Treasury says to you would obviously go and you would say, I need, just as you've done here, I need 18% more for HR, I need 20% more for IT, I need 60% for FET, let's say, whatever. And Treasury says, well, we're giving you 20 million. Go do with it as you wish. That's where the difficulty comes in, isn't it? Especially if you're straddling the work of two departments. Because the minute somebody feels shortchanged, they're going to be problems. So I leave that problem in your lap for the time being, not mine. And we'll see how that works out for you. Second round, I had Dr. Klopas Lawrence, Ms. Mashwana, gone. Good. Mr. Lorimer, you had other questions that you wanted to
pose. I'm coming for now.
You're covered? Okay.
I want to ask two questions on slide 14. You gave reasons as to why there's an increase of 15%, and you mentioned in the first installation of a disaster site. Don't you have one currently? And then more importantly, I would like to know exactly what the implementation of the item bank entails. Item bank. Yes, yes. I know what an item bank is, but I would like to, you to explain when it comes to Umalusi and the requirement of an item bank.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at the conclusion, which has to be linked to something said earlier. You talked of vertical increment, which I think makes a little sense to me now. Maybe we needed to have come to you to explain before we even went into this despair that we did. Because if you are going to deal with three levels, the three exit points, definitely you'll need more. That's my understanding for now. But I'm looking at the possible new funding model that you are talking about. And one would like to know if the old new funding model had anything to do with NSFAS. Because if it did, perhaps one would even support you on this one. But can't you come with a proposal and not just leave it as possible new funding, so that when you go and discuss on more money and you have got some proposal on a new funding, perhaps you'll even have support from those who are trying to sit down and talk about it every day, meaning the this committee. And in future, can one request that if you come with a SWOT analysis before you give us the challenge, perhaps we'll see the strength, because it's like there were weaknesses all along, and we see a lot of threats in this particular report. Thank you.
Looking at I do think that at some stage we will need to engage with you on the strategies and your priorities. I think that that is something. But as you've pointed out, you're going to have to amend those based on the budgets that you've received and so on. So I think for now we will request that report get sent. And if you, Ms. Thomas and Dr. Rakamisi, if you have questions as to how you think or the questions that you have about what I require from you particularly, we can have a discussion privately. But as I said, what we want is what you've asked for, what you actually got, and what remains unfunded as far as your priorities are concerned. So we can have a more detailed discussion about those things once you've also had the opportunity to reprioritize and so on. But we will need that report from you just in response to that. But could we get the responses from the questions that were asked?
In respect to the item bank, Umalisi is currently involved in a project which has two legs. In terms of the National Senior Certificate, we are currently developing anchor items with the idea that a set of anchor items will go into exam papers. Now, these anchor items are written in a specific way and are then graded according to the cognitive difficulty. And obviously, when one puts a set of anchor items into, say, a maths paper, for instance, there would be a spread of difficulty, simple to more, medium and more difficult. And they're very focused, and they've been chosen very specifically because they can give us very clear judgment on a given standard. And it's quite a process in writing those items, pre-testing them and selecting them. And that you then repeat. Now, you need an art, you repeat in every, in the same paper next year, not the same questions, but questions with the same cognitive difficulty, so that you start to measure them against each other from year on year. And that starts to set standard or secure the standard more. It anchors the standard in a way. Okay, so that is what we want to move towards in terms of quality assurance and setting the standard. So it's around our standard setting mandate that we've gotten from SACWA that we've moved in this direction. That's for the National Senior Certificate. There's a new qualification that we're proposing on our framework, which is an alternative matric for adults. It's intended to cater for a market of about, well, just a very large number of out-of-school people, mainly young people, who have not been able to do a rewrite on a matric, and it's a second-chance matric. And the idea is that it should be on demand, and so we're also moving towards looking at how we can develop item banks along with the Department of Education on delivering this on demand. So the item banking itself requires quite a sophisticated IT platform. Not only do you bank the items, it must grade the items and it must select your tests for you. It must be able to do that in the end, on demand. And when we talk about IT, that's what we're talking about. It's that part of it. Okay.
Do you have to take the question paper?
No.
So your samples, they're used to determine quality assurance?
Yes. What an anchor item is, it's not part of the question paper. It's actually separate from the question paper. How one presents it, but it's attached to that question paper, and a learner would be requested to fill that in. It usually comes in the form of a multiple choice question, so it's fairly quick. But those are questions that have been pre-tested. Well, what we've been doing at the moment, we're doing a post-exam analysis, which means we've taken exams that have just been written, and we've started to look at the questions that were there and how learners answered those questions. And according to that, we're starting to pull out questions that we think we could use as anchor items in future papers. And so because they've been written, they've been tested in a way by a large system already. And then the idea is then to bank those questions and over time build up a bank of those questions and then use them as a kind of a standard setting mechanism within the exam papers that are set.
So you
that in
would
addition
you
to
use the paper, them, you use them to assist the exams unit that sets the question.
Yes, and we're actually going
to... Why don't they do it?
Well, they haven't. So we are. We're using it as a standard setting mechanism.
No, I mean, it's a legitimate question. This is going to cost you money.
Yes. Well...
and it's not part of your core function as such. And you're doing it to enable the exams to have a certain scientific basis, okay? Then surely that is something that should be done at that level, not within Umalusi. I'm just...
Now, the anchor items is different from an exam paper.
Yes, you keep saying that, but I'm not sure why. What is it that's different? Because the reason you're keeping it and you're doing a whole database is to inform the exam as opposed to your moderation issue. It does is that, in a sense, it stabilizes the exam over a period of time.
That's right. That's
but
what it
surely
does.
That is not necessarily your core mandate. Your core mandate is to quality assure, whatever that means within the broadest perspective. But I imagine when they set exams at the units that they do, that they don't do so willy-nilly, and that there needs to be some sense that these exams need to happen within a particular framework, a scientific domain, if you will, that measures similar outcomes over a period of time.
Yeah. We are working with the Department of Education on this jointly. This is not something we're doing separately from them. Firstly, I must say that. We can't work separately from them on this. Umalusi's mandate is to set a standard. Now, that's the new mandate. It's not just to quality assure. So what this does is it sets a year, it makes it possible to measure the standard year on year in a more reliable way. That is really all, that's what it does. We're not taking over the role of setting the exam paper. The examiner will set the exam paper. But there'll be another section, a check, which is really the anchor items, which will be similar, say, for years running, so that they're anchored in the same way, we're measuring the same thing every time. There's quite a lot of, I mean, if you come down to expert judgment, there is actually quite a strong, there's quite a lot of variance in how that judgment is made in terms of external moderation. And this is really pinning down much more the notion of cognitive levels and how one determines those. And that's done with certain statistical models, which, of course, I'm not familiar with, but the Rush model being one of those, and I'm not going to go into how that works, but that they use fairly accurate statistical models to determine the difficulty levels. And the anchor items have to be unbiased in all ways so that the learner's not disadvantaged through language or through gender bias or through cultural bias, whatever. And so it's quite difficult to get those questions in the way you would like them so that they give you a clear determination of when the learner answers it, that they're actually doing it based simply on the cognitive difficulty of that question.
Another question to it. You said you work jointly with the department. Is the HSRC involved? Because previously we had an item bank. It was all about the level of difficulty of questions. Do you?
Yes, in the Science Research Council, we're working with them as well. That also involves, yes. Yeah.
Ultimately how that pans out and how much of a partnership that really is. Let me just finally say, and then I'll hand over to all of you to just give your closing comments. I'm also not sure, and maybe you want to, when you do the analysis for us on each of these tables, really, I'm not sure how your staffing and your wage adjustments get done, whether it's through the whole public service thing or whether you have a separate regime. So when it comes to increases and increments, who, you know, and how does that get determined? I see you've got a 14% provision. I think people will be very happy to receive a 14% increase, but I assume that the 14% is also for posts that need to be filled and so on. But just in terms of your HR issues, both in terms of post-creation and regulation of those individual contracts and so on, do you guys accord with your public service regime, or is there a separate regime that pertains to you? I think that must feature perhaps in the analysis as well, so that we understand when these wage negotiations happen, how that affects you as well. Okay. So let me just then hand over to you without any further ado. Oh, sorry. Do you want to ask a question?
Yes, please. It doesn't relate specifically to budget. It relates rather to performance. And that was an issue concerning last year's exams, particularly the physical science exam, where there was a fairly precipitous drop in pass rates and
top-level
achievement.
You were not at the previous engagement that we had with them on the very issue of physical science and so on. So I suggest what I'll do is I'll ask Mr. Brown to pull out that discussion, a fairly lengthy discussion that we had with them. You were not a member of the committee at that time. So I'll ask Mr. Brown to please just pull out that discussion. And if you still have further questions, you can always do it in writing to them if you don't mind. The HR thing and then closing remarks from all of you. Mr. Trudeau, if you want to add to.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, at this point in time, Uma Lucy, the employee increments are approved by the council, and the HR policy looks at those increments that are negotiated at the Department of Public Service and Administration for public servants. It informs it. Uma Lucy has just set up a new remuneration committee under the chairmanship of one of the council members. And Uma Lucy staff have also now become unionized, and so the whole issue of how salaries are going to be negotiated is on the table at this point in time as we speak, Jack. But in the past it has been informed by the DPSA.
I think what you must do as part of the report, give us a sense of, from its inception, what your HR budget was, expenditure was year on year, and in terms a full HR report, how many people you had employed during that period of time, and actual salary figures. I imagine you don't at that stage. I'm not sure if you kept records. Okay, great. So if we can get a full HR report. Number of staff, salary increment over a period of years, and how many posts have since been created, at what level, etc. And then perhaps a bit of analysis on the very issue where you are at now, and how you think that this is going to proceed henceforth with your labor relations. Okay. Dr. Rakamitsi, any closing remarks?
Chairperson, maybe just to amplify the points that have already been made about a few points. The first being the issue of reserves for an organization like Uma Lucy. Initially, as an Uma Lucy Council member, the colleagues will remember, I did not appreciate the fact that they had reserves because I was operating from the mode of a department where colleagues were expected to finish their budget accordingly, and they have no reserves. Now, it has become clear over the years as a council member and ultimately as CEO that an organization like Uma Lucy needs reserves for contingencies. And the fact that you are beginning to dig into our reserves is cause for concern if we have to fund the budget for the coming financial year. In terms of the sustainability of the organization, in terms of bailouts, should we have a crisis for the organization? I'm not sure whether the department will tell you to come and bail us out. That's when the council would then use reserves. I've come to understand that, now operating from Uma Lucy. I'm very happy and also understanding the operations of the organization better as the CEO. A further point that I want to just amplify is around the question of the current funding regime as opposed to the QA levy. Is that it adds some strain in terms of staffing, because now we have to have data slugs, we have to follow up with the department, and this money comes from the same kitty. It comes from Treasury. But for us to get it from the provincial education departments and FET colleges, it's putting some strain on us, and I want to assume that it is also putting some strain on their budget, because they have to then employ people who do extra work. Whereas if the money was top-slide from Treasury and given to Uma Lucy, would be able to cut on some staffing activities. Just one last point.
You should offer them a discount for early pay.
The last point that I just want to make in terms of the report that we're going to prepare on staffing is that before we create any new post at Umazisi, we try to check whether that post is really necessary. And we try to keep it as temporary as possible until we are able to advertise and follow the necessary recruitment processes to ensure that we don't have redundant people in the establishment. And further, that when we make a post permanent, we have to do a full motivation to cancer, to say we realize that we've got pressures in this area. We have studied this area for the past 3 years, and we see that if we appoint a person permanent, he's going to be fully occupied. So we are very, very much prudent when it comes to those areas. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you, Dr. Rakometsi and your whole team. Mr. Trudeau, do you have any? Okay. Let me just say to you, as I have said to Dr. Folmink previously, that in the next term we do hope to have public hearings. With your research and analysis capacity that you've developed, I did invite Dr. Folmink to approach the council and yourself for participation in those public hearings on issues that you think are absolutely vital, both in terms of the issues of access to education as well as quality improvement. I particularly am heartened to hear about this adult matric thing that you have in the pipeline. I do think that is a worthy thing, and it might be something that you might want to come and speak to us about, but we leave it to you really to decide where it is you would want to make that intervention. And we do invite you to have somebody here during those public hearings, just as a, you know, with a standing brief and so on, a running brief, as it were, to monitor the discussions. And then at strategic points, if you do want to make submissions to us, you're very welcome to do so. It would be a great pleasure, I think, to engage with the expertise that you've developed and, of course, some of the research findings. So thank you very much to all of you. And members, we meet next week with the department, which is going to be quite an... What? Oh, I'm sorry. It's ELRC next week. And then we meet the following week, the 16th, with the department. So ELRC next week, and the department the following week. Our budget debate, for those of you who still don't know, has been set down for the 23rd of March. And that is in the format of the EPC, and I believe it's at 2 o'clock on the 23rd of March. Is that correct? I take it that people have already been informed, and if not, please do take note of that development. Okay. Ms. Dr. Kloppers-Lawrence, Mr. Bundy, Mr. Brown, and Madam Wolf, if you want to stay behind, that would be... and whoever else wishes to participate in those subcommittees, both on the framework as well as the public hearings, please do remain behind for a short period of time. Thank you very much to all of you, and we'll see you next week.